I appreciated Jim's comments about our lack of originality, because I find that almost everything I say comes from something I read or something I heard. And I'm not absolutely certain where I got most of this, but I think it may have been from that same class Mike Manning was talking about yesterday that Tom Dennis taught on this subject about 20 years ago. I typed this myself, and it may have come from a variety of sources, but I think, unless I'm mistaken, that Tom's going to see some things that look mighty familiar there. I guess I don't see any use in reinventing the wheel, but I do plan to give this to your young people, and I thought maybe you'd want to see it. Tom, does it look familiar to you? Okay. I thought after that class, I believe that was a class in Ozark, Missouri in 1977, and I typed this up around that time, so it may be pretty much verbatim. Appreciate your help on that. Tom's been a big help in a lot of ways. I remember one time while you're passing these out, I'll just tell you, this was at 63rd Street in Raytown before we built the Gregory Boulevard meeting house. And to Heaven-Bound Youth, thank you. To Heaven-Bound Youth, which was a book that Tom put out for young people, thank you, Richard, hadn't been out too long. And I don't know, maybe Tom had had some feedback that it wasn't appropriate for all ages, but there were a group of us, maybe 8 or 9 years old, sitting on the front row, and Tom slipped up behind us while he was holding a meeting there. We had copies of his booklet. And he said, now, this might not be appropriate for you at your age. There may be some things in there that you shouldn't be reading yet. So, of course, I went right home that night and read it cover to cover. I didn't understand it all. The part about love making via the Braille system and so forth, but I appreciated it. It was a good read and was a big help to a lot of people. But I hadn't thought of that for years, but the other night when you were warning people against reading the Book of Mormon, I thought of what might happen at the lock-in afterward. A bunch of kids sitting around with the Book of Mormon furtively glancing here and there. I appreciate your help on this, Tom, and feel free to throw any comments here as we read through this. And I just wanted to go over it, because I think it's kind of a synopsis of what we've been saying so far, and then after we're finished with it, we'll go on to something else. The first thing that he's saying here is to get a marriage license, all most people have to do is to prove their age. I remember Tom saying that one. And it's true. To get a driver's license, we have to show some ability to drive. To get many kinds of licenses, hunting license in our state of Missouri, if you were born after a certain age, in order to get a hunting license, you have to take a class on hunting. You need another one? Thank you. Yeah, several came in. If you need a sheet, feel free to raise your hand if you haven't gotten one yet. To get a hunting license, you have to be taught the ability to handle a gun in Missouri and many other states. But to get a marriage license, all most of us have to do is prove our age. Many states now, there's not even a blood test anymore. They've done away with that in a lot of places because it wasn't screening out the people that they had most intended the blood test to screen out didn't get married anyway. And so there wasn't much involvement that caused them to keep that blood test in most states. These are just a group of questions that I think are good, and it's pretty comprehensive to ask young people and have them consider this at any stage of a relationship that may, in their eyes, be leading toward marriage. How long have you known each other? Because if you haven't known each other a while, you don't know each other well. Does this person meet all the standards you had in mind before you met him or her? Most of us have an ideal in mind before we get connected with anybody about what our spouse should be like. And as we date people, we tend to compare them to that standard and sometimes alter our standard depending on who we're dating. Where do we plan to live? What occupational ambitions do we have? How well do you know the family? We've emphasized before that you are marrying the family. And I remember Tom emphasized that as well. The reason for that is whether you find them to be much in your thoughts or not, the person's family ordinarily is going to be a tremendous influence on them and a concern to them. If her parents are all up in the air about something, then she may be up in the air over their concerns. So it's going to influence you. Important to notice, is this person most like his or her father or his or her mother? Because we can see there more clearly what they may develop into in the future. Are her parents or his parents a desirable set of grandparents? A lot of couples get along pretty well with the in-laws until they're grandchildren. And now we get a lot pickier about just what influences we want on those grandchildren. If that family uses language you don't want your child using, how are you going to handle that when the grandparents want to be around that child and want to talk as usual around that child? So there are a lot more complications when the children come on the scene. If it became necessary, could you live with the in-laws? I wouldn't recommend that, but sometimes it is necessary. Could you possibly do it? Is this family stable in the Lord? Are they stable emotionally? Are they stable health-wise? How is the health and emotional stability of the person you're considering marrying? Can this person stand to live with you? A lot of times people laugh at that idea, but I'm not attempting to be funny there. Can they stand to live with you? Marriage is a tremendous adjustment. A lot of people crack a little bit under that adjustment. Is this family stable in the Lord? That's an important question I skipped over a moment ago. It's important if our mate's a Christian. There's also some importance as to what their background, religiously speaking, has been. Is your mate, the mate you're considering, stable? Or are they just doing it to put on a show to get you to marry them? Does he or she have any bad habits, such as temper? We stress the point that you can't change this person. So what they are is the package you're marrying. If he can't do any work on his equipment without throwing the tools halfway across the yard, if she bites her nails, you must never expect her to change that, even though it drives you up the wall. And to try to nag our mate into changing these habits only tends to make it worse. They need to recognize that going in. Is this an honest person? Will they answer a question honestly when you ask them? I've used this example before, but it's a striking illustration to me. I knew one couple over in Topeka. On the morning after they were married, she fixed eggs in a particular way that he couldn't stand. But he said he loved them because he didn't want to hurt her feelings. So he was dishonest. And ever after that, whenever there was a special occasion, she'd fix those same kind of eggs. And he never did learn to like them. 50 years of marriage plus. Never did learn to like it. Never did tell her the truth. That's not honest. Is this person honest? We can help our mates be honest if they don't feel they need to walk on eggshells around us all the time. Can we take it when they are honest? That's another question. Then we have a couple questions here that are seen by some as chauvinistic. I see them as talking about roles. I think in our families, for our families to function well, we need to have roles that we each understand. And I don't say they always have to be exactly the same. But the two people involved need to understand whose job what is most of the time, and to have some agreement on that. So I'm asking here, can she cook? Can she sew? Can she make clothes, care for children, manage money? Is she an impulsive buyer? Can she keep house? Critically important questions to answer. Has he changed jobs often? Does he manage money well? Does he respect authority? Is he considerate of other people? Is his income adequate to support you both? The woman may become pregnant immediately. You may have a child on the way very quickly. Is his income adequate to raise a family on? If you watch your money well, is that a possibility? So I'm not trying here in these questions to say that the woman should do all the cooking. I'm only saying that in most families she does most of it. It's traditionally a female role. It doesn't particularly bother me if in your family the man does all the cooking. I think that's fine as long as you're both happy with it. But these are phrased this way because of the traditional roles that we have had. I'll tell you this much, somebody in that family needs to cook. If one of you won't, then you're going to eat out of tin cans or eat out all the time, which becomes tremendously expensive and isn't the most nutritious anyway. You're going to have a terrible time if nobody wants to cook ever. And so these things need to be thought about. You can save a lot of money by making clothes and altering clothes rather than always buying every article of clothing. So that's the intention here behind this. Will the wife be employed outside the home, especially after children are born? I strongly disagree with having the mother away from the home any more than necessary when we have small children in the home. I think it's critically important. Titus said keepers at home. It's extremely important for us to have a full-time mother in the home. Who's going to manage the money? Usually one of us is a lot better at that than the other. I don't know why, but we tend to marry people who are opposite from us in this area. Whoever has the strength in the financial area probably should be the one to manage the money, see that the bills are paid on time so that we don't have late charges, and generally be cognizant of the details there. And the other one is filled in as much detail as they want. Usually there's one in the family that's not as concerned about the detail, financially speaking. In particular, we've got here, what about giving to the church? This is an important question in preparing for marriage, because this is something we almost never discuss with anyone, at least I don't. It's a very private, personal matter between us and God. It's a very important thing that'll keep us out of heaven if we don't do it right, I believe. But yet, it's nobody else's business. One of the things I like about the way the Lord set it up and the way we practice it is that we could be together in the same congregation for 50 years and I'd never know whether you gave a nickel or not, and you wouldn't know the same about me. It's a little different now that we give by check, a lot of us, but it was especially true back in days before when we just gave cash. Nobody knew, and nobody's supposed to know. It's a matter of not letting your left hand know what your right hand is doing. But when we're married, I think that rule is waived. When we're married, we have joint finances, for the most part at least, and we talk together. We make decisions about what our giving is going to be. We talk about how can we grow in this grace also, as Paul said to the Corinthians. So this is one of the few times when we will discuss this with another person, our mate or our prospective mate, and we might forget that if we didn't make a special mention of it. Is this person practical? Are they able to live a life while their head may be in the clouds that still has their feet trampling through the mud with you? Are they so otherworldly that they can't even find a place in this world to be with you? Is there some degree of practicality to this person? Would failure of health affect your love for this person? This is a hypothetical question that can only be answered theoretically, I guess, but it needs to be thought about. If on your honeymoon you have a car accident and your spouse is maimed for life, how would that affect your desire to spend the rest of your life with them? You're committed at that point. If they live on for decades in pain and in a wheelchair, you're committed to be there with them and for them and take care of them till death do you part. Are you ready for that? Does that make a difference in your thinking about wanting to marry and be with this person? Number 20 is one that I have found to be a lot harder than I thought it would be before I got married. Would you have a time for Bible study in your home? Lynn and I had the best of intentions in this area. When we started out, we decided we're going to read some of the Bible, at least a chapter together every day. First night we were married, we read Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2, and ended with that 24th verse there. They were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. And it was a wonderful reading for a wedding night. And then every night for a long time, we would read at least one chapter together. It seemed like it was always night, though, before we got around to doing this. And I remember one time out in California on that extended trip we took on our honeymoon, I was reading the chapter out loud. It was my turn to read it, and I read it out loud. And as I was finishing up, I looked over, and she was sound asleep on the pillow beside me, just so tired. And this happens to us. I don't think you're that much different from me. It's so easy to shut this out of your life, let everything else crowd it out. So what I believe on this is not what I have always practiced, but I do believe it's good for us to have a time for Bible study in our home. And in particular, to read the Bible and read Bible stories to and with our children. Now, some children take to this a lot more easily than others do. Our first two children were as different as night and day on this issue. Amber would sit there and listen as long as you'd read. Or she'd come with a book and say, "Read it to me, read it to me." And Dylan would just as soon slide out under your arm and be off across the floor. I don't know. They just came out differently that way. But in every child, we have some ability to find a way to help implant the Bible stories in their mind in the home. The most important training we give them biblically is in the home. The church may augment and supplement that, but we ought not to think in any kind of terms that the church is going to be the place where they get the most of their Bible teaching. It's just not going to happen in 3 or 4 hours a week. We've got to do that consistently in the home. And again, I haven't been as good at that as I wish I had. I'm certainly not holding myself up as an example. It's one of the worst things about teaching this subject is that you can seem to be holding yourself up as an example. And I don't have an example to hold up in some of these areas, but I do believe in these things. Tom listed in that class some reasons why people marry. Love, companionship, security, desire for home and children, adventure and romance. That's a bigger one in many people's mind than I wish it was. A lot of girls in particular get caught up in the idea of planning a wedding and don't think as much beyond that as they should. Social expectation. How old are you now? Aren't you about 25, 26? Isn't it about time you tied the knot? All your friends are getting married. Now that is an absurd thing to say to a Christian young person. I think sometimes people who say that type of thing just want you to be as miserable as they are. So I wouldn't pay it any mind. And don't let people. There are worse things than being single. Don't let people pressure you, vertently or inadvertently, into getting married. Sometimes people marry for money. There's a bank at home that had a sign up for a long time that said, "He who marries for money earns it." I'm sure there would be some truth in that. Sometimes, despite somebody else who's jilted them, I'll show you that I can. Or I know one girl who got married to show her mother that she was mature and she could get married and have a baby. Well, it lasts a long time. Sometimes on the basis of sexual attraction, sometimes just to get out of a home situation that either is or is deemed to be hard to get along with. Two reasons for selecting a mate wisely, and I think these came from Tom as well. Marriage is a lifelong contract. You know, I don't think I've ever talked to any couple who didn't pay lip service to that idea, but they didn't all honor the idea through the years. Marriage is a lifelong contract, and your mate will be co-parent of your children. That's such a huge one right there. Sometimes we can put up with one another as we are with all our faults and foibles. But when I see my little child begin to duplicate the attitudes and actions that I can't stand in my spouse, then I really get worried, and vice versa. So your child is going to have at least half input from this person you're marrying. Does that give you pause for reflection? You've got some scriptures there about marriage that I'm sure in a class like this we're pretty familiar with, and we may or may not need to go over them. You're welcome to bring them up if you'd like to. And then at the last, and I apologize. I don't know, Tom, how much of this came from you. It looks like at least one sentence came from Marvin, and that's kind of what I do, just fuse. Encourage each other. Try to bring out the best in your mate. There are going to be problems in marriage no matter what. Respect and trust one another and be just as considerate of the other person as you are of yourself. Always be Christian. Never withhold from one another. And share life together. Questions or comments on this sheet? Oh, okay, Joanne.
You said that you did not agree that if there were young children in the home that the mother should not work?
I don't think she should work unless, obviously, if it's absolutely necessary, then she has to. But I think she should be in the home, if at all possible, to be with those children full time. Nobody cares as much about your children as you do, not even your mother. Not even their grandmother. Definitely not the people at the daycare center. And our children's waking hours when they're small should be as much as possible spent in the companionship of their parents, I verily believe. Free to express disagreement, anybody who would care to. But Titus said, keepers at home. I think this is extremely important. Marvin?
I know in our own home that my mother had 9 boys and 1 girl, and it was hard to get attention sometimes in competition with other siblings. But the first person we called for when we came home from school was, "Where's Mom?" Mm-hmm. And I think children miss that.
She's the hub around which everything revolves in that home. And if she's not there, and it may be through no fault of her home, in some cases that's true. And I don't want to put feelings of guilt upon you if that's your situation. But I think a lot of times people tell themselves that's their situation when it really isn't. Who is it now? Or was there another? I'm sorry. I guess not. Okay. I think sometimes we tell ourselves that that's the situation when it isn't. And I know that sometimes the women think I'm picking on them a little bit. I think it's just as much the man's responsibility that sometimes causes this. I have said before, I'll say it now, I don't mind saying it again, I would work 3 jobs rather than have my wife have to leave our home when we have little children there that need to be raised. And in my case, I wouldn't have married somebody who didn't agree with me on this issue. I think these are the types of things we have to discuss ahead of time so that we're not always butting heads about it after the fact of marriage. We need to have an agreement ahead that this is the way we look at this. And to me, it's not demeaning to woman at all. I know that sometimes it may come across that way. I know that there are other things I've said this week and groans that we've had that some of the women think I'm picking on them, so I'll tell you a story. Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the perfect man and the perfect woman were riding along together in a car. They had a flat tire. They pulled over to fix the tire, and one of them got out to fix the tire. Who was it that got out to fix the tire? The perfect woman. You know why? Because the other 3 are fictional characters. And that's not entirely joking. I think woman can really rise higher than man can. She has a tremendous role to fulfill. I have a magic drawer at home in the dresser in our bedroom, and no matter how often I go to it, it seems like there's clean underwear, clean socks, just there, magically replenished. A magic closet with shirts that are washed and ironed, just as if by magic. I don't say that if you're the man in your home that you ought not to do those things. I think it's wonderful if you do. Whatever your arrangement is, I guess I'm a little embarrassed to admit to you, we've got a washing machine that I have never run. I don't know how long we've had it, but I have never run it. We bought it at least 2 or 3 years ago. I could if I needed to, I think, but I never have. We have a clothes dryer that I have never operated. We have a dishwasher. I've loaded it, but I've never actually run it. And again, I humbly submit to you that I do not say it needs to be this way in your home. Maybe it shouldn't be this way in my home. I thank God that I have a mate who understands that my work is just overwhelming and that every moment she can give me away from these other tasks is a moment I can use for the Lord's work. But it's a cooperative thing, you see. If I didn't have her there helping in this way, then I wouldn't be able to do half of what I do. That's how I know that the perfect woman exists, because I'm married to her.
Here is a quote from G.K. Chesterton. "Can anybody tell me 2 things more vital to the race than these? What man shall marry what woman? What shall be the first things taught to their children? The natural operation of life surrounds the young mother with her very young children, who need to be taught not so much anything, but everything. Babies don't need to be taught a trade, but to be introduced to a world. To put the matter shortly, a woman is usually shut up into a house with a human being at the time when he asks all the questions that there are and some that there aren't. Our race has thought it worthwhile to cast this burden on women in order to keep common sense in the world. But when some talk about her duty as trivial and dreary, I do not understand, for I cannot with utmost energy of imagination conceive what they mean. If drudgery only means dreadfully hard work, I agree that she drudges in the home. I admit she drudges in the home as a man might drudge at his work. But if it means the work she does is more heavy because it is trifling or callous or unimportant or of small import to the soul, I cannot understand. How can it be an important career to tell other people's children about mathematics and a small career to tell your own children about the universe? A woman's function is laborious, not because it is minute, but because it is gigantic. I will pity the woman for the hugeness of her task, but I will never pity her for its smallness.
Thank you very much, Tom. Well said. Well, this is an area that is wrought with emotion, and I know you don't all agree with me because this isn't the first time we've discussed this. But I feel duty-bound to tell you what I believe the Lord's will is in this matter, and I hope you'll give consideration to it. That's all I ask. There's no question but what the children's first and most important teacher is the parents in the home, and primarily the mother who is with them the most. I do not believe that mother and father are interchangeable parts, although I think they're both critically important. But they're not interchangeable parts, and the mother is especially equipped to be with those children, maintain and sustain them, give them their first sense of security, and really shape their whole outlook on life if they live to be 100 years old. Tom, please.
Rick, back up here in the first part of your questions.
Your questions.
I recall back many years ago teaching along these lines, and a girl, I reckon probably about 15, 16 years old, came to me after a class discussion. She had written out a list of standards. I don't know, you've got something like that in here. Mm-hmm. She had written out things that she wanted in a mate and in marriage. I don't know, I suppose that woman's old enough to be a grandmother by now. But I thought that was an admirable trait. She planned ahead of time. She made up a list of qualities that she wanted in her mate. And as far as I know, she pretty well stuck by them.
Excellent. I'll never forget, and I guess I'll go ahead and mention him by name because I don't think he would mind it. It was a very good thing, I thought. Grant Riggins was staying at our house one time, and this was before he was married and while he was looking, but he said, "I'm looking for a Wednesday night girl. I don't look so much on Sunday morning, but I look at who's there in the congregation on Wednesday night." And he got one, and she's a jewel. Appreciate the thought. Thank you. There was Bob. Well, Joyce or Bob, either. Go ahead, Joyce.
Is it wrong to give back to the Lord with a check?
Oh, no, I didn't mean to indicate that at all. And I do think that most of the people who count the contribution probably look at the numbers and not the names. I know I've counted the contribution a few times, and it's very easy just to look at the number that's up in the corner and not see the name. No, I didn't mean to indicate that at all. I do very often give with a check because the amounts of money we give now are so much larger than they used to be. When we were just making a little bit, it just seemed more natural then to give with cash. But now we've kind of come away from that kind of a society. So you wouldn't want to have to carry with you. At least I don't like to carry very much cash with me even. I use a credit card a lot. It's just a different approach now. I personally find no fault with giving by check. I think it's just fine. Bob, you're next.
You said about the mother being in a home with small children.
Yes.
I think that teenagers, especially the early teens, need mom just as much as, if not more so.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a lot of truth in that.
Difficult time.
I guess when I say with small children, I think that's critically important. And it seems like people want to know sometimes, well, how soon can I get out of the house? And so I'm saying if you're going to make that kind of decision, stay with them as long as you can, as long as you can find it within your possibilities in your home. Stay with them. But I agree completely that in those teenage years, if mother can be there all the time, that is absolutely wonderful. And sometimes even more important. When a 13-year-old girl needs to talk, she needs to talk right then, whether that's right after school or 3 o'clock in the morning. And if mother can be available for that, that's... it's just wonderful. You're just ahead. The more the mother can be there with the children, the better off we are. And when the mothers are not there, it's a negative impact on the home, on the church, on the country, and the influence never ends. This is critically important. Was there another thought? Michael, I think you're next.
My wife often gets extremely upset at discussions such as this. My wife has worked the entire time that we have been married. And thus far, I think we've done a reasonable job. It can be done. I'm not saying it's best for all couples. I'm not saying it's easy. Certainly, my parents have been a major asset for us. But if anyone wants to discuss ways about... how to handle breastfeeding while you're working and things like that. It all can be worked out and reasonable results can occur.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mike. I love your kids. It seems like there's a lot of things going well there. Appreciate it. Marvin?
I think particularly in the Church of Christ that young ladies often outnumber young fellows. Mm-hmm. And young ladies get discouraged thinking they'll never find anybody that meet their standards. And so they compromise and take something less than they deserve. And I feel that that's where an older person can come in that knows them well. If they can get them off in the corner and say, you deserve better than this, why don't you hold out till you get it?
Okay. Thank you very much. It's well spoken. Cliff, you're next.
In regard to Joyce's questions, there have been, in my hearing, some statements about contributing by check in this way, and that is that your contribution is to be a private matter. Well, if the person who is taking care of that is doing what he's supposed to keep his mouth shut about who contributed what.
Right.
That's number one. And if he isn't, of course, then somebody else ought to be picked out to do it. The other thing is that we have a tax system that will, contributions can be taken out of your income tax. However, you got to be prepared to back that up if you ever have an audit for any reason. And the only thing they will take that I have ever run into, and I have had that done, is a check. They will not take your word for it. And I can see the point because not all people would put on their income tax return the truth on how much they gave.
Yeah, in a number of congregations, if you give cash rather than a check, you're about the only one. So if there's a pile of cash there, they know how much you gave anyway if they're looking to find out. So you wouldn't be hiding as much as you might think these days. Jim.
The father, I think, is critically important, too, all the way.
I do, too.
If husband and wife can take turns changing children in the night,
absolutely.
Let them know they have two loving, responsible parents. If they both back each other in discipline, if the father makes opportunities to be with his children, makes an effort to be home whenever he can with them, backs them, works with them. I think this is a two-person job.
Absolutely.
I know that it's pushed off on mothers a great deal, but it's not all that difficult to change a dirty diaper.
That's true.
And I think the father should shoulder his responsibility, do everything he possibly can, not only to work with, but to help his wife.
I agree completely. It is the man who is told to provide for his own, and the woman to be a keeper at home. So they're not interchangeable roles, but both are critically important. David.
I,
three things if I can. Number one, I think the IRS will take any kind of an ordered list that you have, which talks about the cash donations that you gave. And for a while, I was giving cash all the time, and each week I wrote down in my Bible what I gave, hoping that somebody from the IRS would question what I wrote in
you
my Bible.
Take your Bible. Okay?
we'll take that in and discuss it with them. But I do believe that's a legal thing you can do, is just make a list of the cash contributions. As long as you have it organized by date when it was given, they'll accept that just fine. The second issue, I guess, is I would really talk about, we've talked about the value of parents and the woman in the home, and I will speak up, that's the way we chose to do it, but certainly my sister-in-law, Kathy Manning, is a workaholic, works all day and works all night at home, but what has made that happen for Mike and Kathy is the grandparents, and I think that's a phenomenal role, that if grandparents can play that role, I just think that is superb, and when possible, we need to take advantage of that. We made a comment yesterday morning when we drove in here. There's a daycare center right on the corner, and all the kids were out playing, and all the people who were supposed to be watching them were sitting in the corner reading a newspaper. Mm. So that is what you get with daycare.
Thank you very much. Yes, grandparents can play a critical role there, and especially when the mother does need to be away. It's very true. Richard, you have the mic?
Yeah. As the one at Chapel Glen who does take care of the checks, there has been a change with the IRS now, and even checks are not enough. If you are audited, you will be required to get from an appropriate, your church treasurer, a statement saying he knows full well that you gave that amount, even if there were checks involved. That's not enough now.
I see.
So I just wanted to kind of set a thing or two straight. I would also offer this as well. I don't know if... we haven't had a home mortgage for quite a while, so it has not been advantageous for us to itemize because the standard deductions have gone so high in late years that for us, we can't justify itemizing. And I offer that as a suggestion. And if you're conscious of that, then you may want to look at that. And if you're not itemizing anyway, and if you're concerned about this, then don't write checks. Because if you're not going to be able to claim it as a deduction, why, you're solving several problems there if you have a problem with that.
Appreciate that. I wonder if I'll ever be able to say I don't have a home mortgage. That must feel good.
Richard, we've had our house so long that the payments were $100 a month and we had a 6.5% loan.
Congratulations. Jeannie?
I just wanted to say that if a mother does have to work... she might think about school, working at a school, because then she's free when the children are free. And if it's a necessity, why then...
That makes sense to me. And a number of our sisters have done this. Whatever we can do to maximize the amount of time she can spend with her children. Mike, did you... I'm sorry, I don't hear so well.
It's not a bad job for Dad either.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fonda.
Well, my comment's kind of been made already. Jim and I have taken the approach where Jim's able to get off work and like an 40-hour job, like mm-hmm. lots of times, but he will not work if the kids have games or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's never been a game that we have not attended with our children. And I see failure in my folks' generation maybe a little bit, that work came first, which is a good trait, and I don't mean to downplay that. Mm-hmm. But I also see time spent with kids as very, very important, and I think that is a number one for the father as well.
I know people's situations differ. I can be called out of town at the drop of a hat, and if I didn't have my wife there to guide the house, I really don't know what I do. I just have to make alterations in what I do. That's all I could do. I think there was someone else, wasn't there? Maybe not.
I think Fonda also wanted you to clarify. Did you say you thank God?
did you say you thank God
for your mate or thank God for your maid? I don't know if she was going to say that or not.
I deserve that.
Fun to hit me for you, so.
Well, both, actually.
I don't have a rebuke, but...
You what?
I don't have a rebuke, but I do have a suggestion that I personally would like to see the Church of Christ encourage women more to stay at home. The first 3 years of Nicholas's life, I stayed at home with him, and then this past year I worked. And, you know, I felt worldly-wise that I should be working, and it definitely didn't pan out to be the way I thought it would turn out. And, you know, I look back and I see things that Nicholas and Madison picked up at the daycare that I know that they would never have been exposed to in our house in that situation. And, you know, you have to think of it in a certain sense that, you know, why in the world would you ever choose a mate that isn't a Christian? So why in the world would you ever choose a daycare provider over yourself, which is a Christian, to bring that child up? And this is something I know that I'm going to battle this next year, because we are so involved in school, and I know a lot of people are going to encourage me to stay as involved in school as what I could, but, you know, right now I realize that being that Christian parent for my children is most important, and I'll just keep reminding myself that why would I ever want to anyone else but myself watch them.
God bless you for that, Ginger. They're only little for such a little time, and they depend completely on us. Let's give them our best and the most of ourselves that we can give. And if that means doing with a few less things, or even, you know, I'd rather, I'm putting too much personal opinion. I don't like to talk about myself and my own situation as much as I have been. But I thank you for that expression, and I hope you can stick with your plan there. I think it's critically important, and I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I didn't tell you so. I think we have a biblical orientation here in that direction. And I know it's controversial, and I know you don't all agree with me, and I wouldn't hurt you for the world. And I think some of you do a remarkable job under conditions that are not ideal. So it's all said in the spirit of love. Anne, go ahead. If you've got a mic, go ahead.
I just was throwing this in as a comment from someone else. Over the years, I've heard several younger women say that they feel like their children learn more responsibility at home if they aren't there all the time. And they have felt like it was an advantage to their maturing for them to have, like the girls 11, 12, 13 along in there, to be responsible for getting the meal on the table because mom isn't there and things. Well. And some of them being more responsible for other things of the home. Now, I'm not saying this is my idea. I'm just throwing it out.
And I want to comment on it when you're finished. Are you?
No, I was thinking there is something to this, but I think my personal opinion is that God gave us these children to guide. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to be the kind of mother or father that we should be, it seems to me that our guidance and training is important in teaching them the responsibility and seeing that they do these things under your supervision.
Exactly.
So that they can do it in their own homes.
I don't want to leave the impression that by saying the mother should be there, that I'm saying that she should do everything for the children. I don't mean that at all. She teaches them to do all of these things. They can learn just as much, hopefully more, about how to fix the meal and do everything that needs to be done with her there and under her supervision. Maybe she's over in the corner working on something else while all this is going on, but she's there in case the grease catches fire or what, for any emergency, she's just there. And I just think that's important. But I think a lot of times it's misunderstood, and sometimes women in the home feel like they're there to do everything for everybody. I don't believe that at all. Not at all. Does somebody have the mic here now, or? Okay, I didn't know. we've about progressed to the point where I don't want to start a new theme. And we have spent an awfully lot of time on the dating and preparation for marriage issue. I guess you notice we've kind of slid into marriage and family now, and I'd like to continue with that tomorrow by talking about some of the things that are on the inside of us, the way we seem to be made, and the way we are geared because of the homes we grew up in, and how we may be acting and reacting in our homes and lives now based on what we experienced as children growing up. I think this may be a way that will help us get to the root of some of the changes we need to make in our marriages and families. So that's the plan for tomorrow. Really, that was the plan for today. But I'm glad we discussed this sheet, and I appreciate, Tom, you making this information available to us a long time ago. And I'll probably pass that out to the kids on Friday, if not before. Anybody else have anything to say this afternoon? Okay, Kimber?
Well, the last comment made me think of this, that I've heard some moms say that they don't want to give their children too much responsibility because they feel almost like they're making them their slave.
But to me, it's just the opposite. Your children, you're there to teach them how to be and to be servants. They should have that serving attitude.
In the average home, it's a long way in the other direction, rather than them being slaves.
Right.
I think there's a pendulum swing throughout society.
Yep.
Maybe children used to be made slaves. I think in some cases they did. That's why we have child labor laws, because it was so extreme in one direction. Now it's kind of extreme in the other.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cases they can't even go get the job they want until they're a certain age.
Yeah, they're not willing to work, and I've seen that, and I sometimes see it in my own children after all the drilling they get. But I think that's a really important thing, that we should instill the serving and the wanting to work, and they're proud of themselves for what they can do.
You just reminded me of something Henry told me your dad said one time. But I never did teach you kids to work. I never could get that across, so I guess it just kind of passes down. Oh, okay. This is about over, and I'm glad it is. Go ahead, Ann. One last comment.
I just had to tell something along the line what you just said when Stephen was about, maybe 8 or long in there sometime. He came in after dumping the waste baskets and the garbage and all the chores that he had been assigned. And he stood there in front of me and he says, "I know why you had children, to do your dirty work." And then a few years, his little boy, oldest one that was about 3 years old when we were there, and he told him to go empty the wastebasket and all this. And the little boy was not wanting to do it, and he practically had to whip him into doing it. And after he got out of the room, I looked at Steve and I says, "Is he doing your dirty work?"
We'll continue tomorrow, Lord willing. Thanks, everybody.